Thank you all for joining us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. This is Scott Becker. Today, I'm thrilled to be talking to two brilliant leaders on a topic that is just critical to what's going on in today's world. We're going to talk today about the growing shortage of anesthesia providers and how best to assure great coverage. We've got two leaders with us. We have Dr. John DiCapua, who is the CEO of North American Partners in Anesthesia. And he's joined today by Dr. Rafael Cartagena, who's the Chief Operating Officer of North American Partners in Anesthesia. Before we get started, Dr. DiCapua, can I ask you to take one moment to introduce yourself, and then Rafael, Dr. Cartagena, I'll ask you to do the same thing. John, do you want to take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. First, I just want to say how happy we are to be on here with you to discuss this very important topic. My name is John DiCapua, and I'm an anesthesiologist, been with North American Partners in Anesthesia, which we affectionately call NAPA, since 1994, and I'm CEO of the organization.
Thank you very much. Rafael?
Thank you, Scott. Rafael Cartagena, also an anesthesiologist. I currently serve as Chief Operating Officer for the organization. I joined the company in 2014 when my practice in Richmond, Virginia was acquired by NAPA. And I have, over the years come up through the ranks, and now I'm happy to support all of our clinicians in our field-based operations.
Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. And Richmond, a fabulous town, but thank you for both joining us. Dr. DiCapua, let me start with yourself. We have this fascinating combination in our country of a growing population, 330 million plus, and also an aging population. And we couple that with the large portion of the physician workforce that's aging and that will be 65 or older within the next decade, thus creating a perfect storm, physician supply and demand, really huge looming shortages of physicians and providers. Are there any other trends, specific trends, besides aging and growth of the population and aging of the physician population that are relevant to the anesthesia staffing shortage that we're seeing today?
Absolutely there are. And you're 100% right about, several of the factors that are creating a mismatch between the supply and the demand for medical providers. But what often kind of gets lost is the fact that we also have this concept of being a very innovative country in healthcare. And we lead the world in driving medical innovation, and that allows people, for example, to have procedures today that in the past may have not been candidates. So we have done a great job by pushing things, minimally invasive surgical procedures, radiologic procedures, using diagnostic tools to be able to do percutaneous procedures that in the past used to require surgery. And that just increases the number of people that are available to have corrective surgery. At the same time, we also have the other impact of pushing cases out of the hospital to now more ambulatory environments, whether they be ambulatory surgery centers and offices. Now, in our experience, when a community expands or builds a new ambulatory center, they very often the hospital does not shut down or close operating rooms. And so although, for example, 15 years ago, most surgical procedures replacing total joints were done in a hospital, a lot of them now move to ambulatory. We've not decreased the number of spaces in hospitals. And so what we're effectively doing is we're horizontally spreading the procedure locations that all require anesthesia support. And so we, in fact, are doubling the number of anesthesia locations in this country, and we're nowhere close to increasing the number of providers. I mean, these are good things. Lots of patients want to have surgery in outpatient centers. It's more customer friendly, tends to be easier for people to get to, lower risk of COVID transmission, a lot of positives, lower cost. But it's really spreading the anesthesia provider industry very thin at this point. And so we have to address these issues. Unfortunately, I think that in the future, this problem is going to continue to evolve along with the aging population. And since we have no quick fix to educating more providers, and you must have anesthesia for many of these surgical procedures, we're effectively going to have some places that don't have enough, while others do a better job at attracting providers. And that's one of the reasons why we picked this topic, because we think it's really important for leaders to understand that if they want to maintain a healthy surgical perioperative program, that having surgeons and nurses and anesthesia providers focus on their institution is going to be a bigger challenge in the future. And so we have to work together to achieve that goal.
But your point, Dr. DiCapua, is really well taken. You start with an aging and growing population, then you've got more sites of service and more people having surgery. And your point, existential issue that you mentioned is one we're seeing already. We have certain hospitals have enough beds, they have enough spaces, but they don't have staff. And it's really a similar issue you see coming for anesthesia. If you're not the place of choice to work, if you can't attract anesthesia coverage, you might have to do what some hospitals are doing already, which is not allow more services because you just simply can't staff them. So your point is really well taken. And Dr. Cartagena, let me ask you a question. Another trend that we've been seeing in anesthesia and physicians generally is a much greater prioritization of work-life balance and greater flexibility. And this can complicate staffing. Currently, NAPA, North American Partners in Anesthesia, covers more than 500 hospitals and ASC clients. How does this factor in? How does this desire for greater work balance, work-life balance, flexibility, how does this factor into your recruiting and retention to help assure adequate coverage? And do you see variation in clinicians' preferences for work-life balance by state or region? What are some of your observations, and what are some of the things you're seeing there, Dr. Cartagena?
It's a great question, Scott. That trend certainly does impact the number of anesthesia provider hours available on the macro level. So it is a big question that, you know, anybody looking to provide anesthesia services needs to be thinking about. Due to this trend, we've had to recalibrate our structure to allow for this flexibility. And what I mean by that is we have to offer a broader range of employment options to clinicians in order to attract and retain the talent we need. Some examples of this would be looking for structures that are, you know, really non-traditional, like a week on, week off approach, extended shifts, job sharing, non-call positions, so basically no nights and weekends. But then in order to offset that, you also have to consider offering call-only positions. And this is all layered on top of the more traditional full-time, part-time, per diem approaches. So it really does take a lot of creativity. We do find that is a big differentiator. By broadening the tent, you're really able to attract a more diverse workforce and meet people's needs as they move through different stages of life. So we've had a lot of success with this and are continuing to look for new and innovative ways to do it. On a regional basis, I would say that this is certainly a national problem, and it does go on everywhere to some extent, but there are some geographies that seem to move in that direction a little bit more quickly or nimbly than others. For the most part, we'd find that the Northeast is a little bit more entrenched in what I would call traditional models. Meanwhile, other parts of the country are more quickly adapting to this. And we don't have a really good explanation for it, but it is something we are observing organization-wide.
Thank you very, very much. And one of the things that Dr. DiCapua mentioned was this emergence of more sites. And you're seeing a great deal more sites that need anesthesia coverage, ambulatory surgery centers, more and more surgeries moving to ambulatory surgery centers, ambulatory surgery sites. Anesthesia has obviously helped that by enabling the expansion of its service lines and helping to move things to quicker and more outpatient surgery. Do you see more clinicians that want to prefer to work in surgery centers versus hospitals? What do you see with your anesthesia community? And how does your anesthesia company meet both your clinicians' needs and the clients' needs? I mean, you've got clients that have hospital settings, higher acuity settings, lower acuity settings, more outpatient, less outpatient settings. How does your company work through that with clinicians and to meet clinician and client needs?
Well, we view this as a great opportunity for us. Overall, if the migration of cases into ambulatory environments plays right into a core competency for us. We've been doing it for decades. We consider ourselves to be experts in it. So, you know, as things are developing and advancing in that area, we feel like we're really well positioned to, you know, partner with facilities to meet their needs. On the clinician side, it's also a great opportunity because it gives us more diverse environments to offer our clinicians as opportunities for employment. What we really want to do is match people with the environment that they're best suited to and will be most successful in and thrive in. That'll create the greatest job satisfaction. There really is a big difference between, you know, working every day in a fast-paced ASC where, you know, perhaps the acuity is somewhat lower than the hospital, but there's a lot more, you know, interest in rapid turnover and, you know, obviously having patients primed for immediate discharge, as opposed to a hospital environment where you might have a little bit more time to practice your trade, but the intensity and complexity of the cases is higher than ever, with more of the straightforward cases moving to the ASCs. So we love the fact that we can offer different opportunities to different clinicians depending upon where they are in their personal lives or in their career spectrum, and they can stay with us and grow with us and evolve with us over time. This also really works out great when we look at it for if someone joins the organization and needs that hospital-based experience while they sort of build up their skill set, and then they enter another phase in life where maybe they need to not work evenings or weekends or something and still want to be in the hospital, we can work with them. And then eventually maybe they'll move into a ASC environment when they really want to just get down to a more compressed workday and are really excited about the opportunities that are being offered there. So to us, it's just about diversity of opportunities for clinicians and making sure we're putting the right people in the right place at the right time.
So I'm gonna add to that a little bit because it touches upon one of our philosophies. In order to give people a diverse number of opportunities, and the one that Rafael talked about was someone may start in the early part of their career working in a tertiary care environment, but then later on decide to move in an ambulatory environment. That means that you have to have those opportunities available to you in order to keep people in your organization. And so it really touches upon our philosophy of we try, when we move into a region, it is our intent to have a sizable presence in a region so that we have all of these diverse opportunities available to our providers. It allows us to be able to flex staff between institutions so that if, for example, someone says, I'd like to open up a pediatric service line, but initially that institution may not have a busy service, so it's hard to attract a pediatric specialist there. Because we have enough people in the region, we can bring that talent to bear until that site develops a volume to support their own pediatric specialized staff. So in order to create this sense that people can kind of do what it is that they're interested in doing at any period in their career, it begins with having those opportunities available to them. And so we insist upon growing in through regions. And instead of having islands in a faraway land, we won't do that. In fact, we openly tell people we really can't provide you the value that we want to if all we do is provide service with four providers and we don't have anything else around you.
I mean, it's critical that you've got sort of the depth of clients so that your anesthesiologists have choices and your anesthesia providers have choices, and the depth of anesthesiologists and anesthesia providers. I mean, you've really got to be really strong on both to be great with clients and great with anesthesiologists and anesthesia providers, so that you could constantly put those two together and have the right opportunities for both. And that brings me to a question, Dr. DiCapua. Being a destination of choice for your anesthesiologist, you touched on it a little bit there. You've got to have all the opportunities and the right opportunities from the right flexibility. But what does it mean in total to be the destination of choice for anesthesia providers?
You know, it means a lot of things. And you're right. In the end, we're a people company, and our job is to provide the best talented clinicians to serve the communities that we're asked to work in. And to be a destination of choice, a long time ago, most people would have answered with, you just have to pay people enough, whatever the market salary is. And we've gotten a lot more nuanced in our company, understanding the needs and wants of our providers. And compensation and total compensation is clearly important, but it's a gating item in our world. You have to do much more than that when you have a labor shortage and a growing number of opportunities for every provider. And so we focus on all the other things once we, you know, meet the market compensation, okay, that a community drives. And there are things like having strong leadership. And we focus a lot on our leaders that create the culture in every one of our environments. So if it's a hospital, ambulatory surgery center, spending a lot of time educating our leaders, picking the right leaders correctly in the first place, supporting them, giving them the tools that they need in order to drive their practices locally, to be able to recruit effectively, to retain people. So we focus a lot on leadership, insisting upon equitable and transparent scheduling and compensation, opportunities for professional growth and advancement. One of the benefits of a large consolidating company like Napa is that as people go through their careers, they may want to dabble in other aspects that like administrative medicine or project management or a different specialty. And being able to allow people the opportunity to seek those different paths is really important. I mean, in my own career, for example, I started out in pain management. and was a full-time pain management specialist for about 7 years, went into the operating room, decided I wanted to spend more time in thoracic anesthesia, and then went on to become chair of the department, and then ended up being an academic chair at a brand new medical school, and now I'm CEO of the organization. I mean, I never predicted that that's what I would do, but the fact that I was able to do that in one organization has been unbelievably rewarding. And that's the kind of opportunities we want to create for, you know, for everyone. And Rafael talked about flexible employment options. All of those things are just a few examples of what it means to be a destination of choice. And for us, we have a strong human resources department that has people who specialize in just asking the questions. What can we do to meet your needs better? You know, how's it going? So we survey all of our employees, all of our clinicians. We ask them what we do well and what we can improve. It's a lot more of the soft stuff that in the early part of my career, we didn't talk about much, but today has become obviously some of the more important things that keep people working at a facility. I've certainly learned one thing. If someone's unhappy with the way they're treated in medicine, highly paid employees, there's no amount of money you can pay somebody for them to want to be there if they don't feel that they're being treated right. And so you have to do all of it correctly.
Isn't that the truth, though? You can't pay somebody through misery. You just can't do it. You can't pay them enough to want to keep their job or keep performing at the level you want them to perform at if you're not creating the right type of culture, the right type of situation. And Dr. Cartagena, let's talk about similar issue in the context of COVID-19. There's been a ton written about the enormous toll that COVID-19 and the pandemic has taken on healthcare workers and the state of burnout amongst healthcare workers, clinicians, obviously anesthesiologists and more. Dr. Cartagena, in this sort of very stressed environment, how does an anesthesia company take care of its clinicians so that they can keep on taking care of the patients of the health systems, the surgery centers and so forth, so they can keep on taking care of patients? How do you take care of, you know, at the end of the day, it really comes down to how well can you take care of your people? Talk to us about what you can do and what's being done through the pandemic.
I'd be happy to address that, Scott. Before I dive into that, I just want to add a couple of comments to Dr. DiCaprio's statements about destination of choice. Everything that he mentioned is really critical to our success there. But despite all these headwinds with, you know, shortages in anesthesia and the expansion of coverage responsibilities, executing against the recipe he described has allowed us to reduce our vacancy rates company-wide by 20% since 2018. And the biggest compliment we can get paid by our clinicians is that our biggest driver of new hires by a large margin is referrals from existing team members. So when we take that recipe and then, you know, we talk about all the challenges that the pandemic has created, you know, it feels like we're really able to do what we need to take care of our people. In specific, related to the pandemic and COVID, first thing I want to say is I want to call out the enthusiasm that we saw from so many of our team members to help and to make a difference in the communities that they live and work in during the height of the pandemic. You know, anesthesia providers were called on, you know, for airway management when people really didn't understand how COVID was being transmitted at all, and there was very little personal protective equipment out there, you know, to provide that care, and it, you know, didn't stop people from diving in and doing what needed to be done. But of course, as you pointed out, that does create a lot of stress. And, you know, we tried to provide flexibility for our team members so that they could be involved to what extent they were comfortable with, given their personal situation or perhaps their situation at home and, you know, whatever the general concerns they're experiencing. I think we were well positioned to deal with this because of our single specialty focus. You know, let's be honest, COVID is a very, you know, big, complicated situation, but, you know, the nuances of how it plays out across different medical specialties or different care environments are different. And the fact that we are anesthesia centric and, you know, that's all we do, allowed us to really focus in on and address the challenges and the elements of the pandemic that were specific to anesthesia and of concern to our clinical colleagues. So we think that gave us a big leg up in addressing what they needed and supporting them as best as possible. We also have a great program in place called Caring for the Caregiver. This program is basically training for clinician peers so that they can offer support to their colleagues that happen to go through a traumatic experience due to an adverse patient outcome. So in effect, when something doesn't go as planned, and obviously plenty of that happened during COVID, it could be very traumatizing to the clinicians providing the care. And although you could sort of refer them to outside therapy resources, we thought the best approach would be to set up a network of people that they can talk to that have actually walked miles in those shoes and understand the perspective and the challenges, and will be better informed to sort of hear what they were going through and, you know, help support them in a knowledgeable and thoughtful way. And then lastly, over the years, we made a significant investment in our sort of operational support structure, which we call our regional leadership team. And that is embedded with clinicians throughout the organization. So when we are approaching issues and looking at it, there's always a clinician focus to it. Every decision we make in this company has clinicians at the table guiding it. And I think that allowed us to really navigate the pandemic with a clinician-centric lens and come through it stronger than ever.
So just overall, a fantastic effort. And your point on being single specialty and really focused on taking care of anesthesia providers, anesthesiologists, and so forth really resonates and makes sense because you really know your population well, so you could take care of them well. Dr. DiCapua, one other question I have for you. What else can anesthesia companies do to ensure consistent service delivery? What else can you do as NAPA to make sure things are continuing to go in the right direction?
Well, first of all, it begins with our philosophy that our role is not just to provide great anesthesia in the operating room, and that our day doesn't begin and end by when we put our scrubs on and take them off. We've always believed, and of core to our leadership structure, that it's our role to partner with our institutions to solve whatever the facility is prioritizing at that moment in time, and to really be an advocate and a leader to help them achieve their goals. And we've learned, being at over 500 institutions, we can tell you that different communities will focus on different things. A hospital at some point in their evolution may say, we want to develop a cardiac service or cardiology service or cardiac surgery service. Another institution might say, our biggest challenge is that we're in competition with another health system in the environment. Another one might say, we're having difficulty recruiting enough perioperative staff. And we as anesthesia providers have learned a long time ago that we can't possibly do well unless our hospital and our partners do well. And so we're naturally aligned to try and solve the problems that our institutions are feeling at that moment in time. And we train our leaders. It's one of the things that when we talked before is, but how do you actually become a destination of choice for your providers is through leadership. And it's the same answer here. How do you actually maintain service and stickiness with your customers is, again, through leadership. And so when we evaluate our leaders, you know, we openly talk about how you have to be a good clinician and you have to know how to make a good schedule and be fair and supportive to your providers, but you also have to meet with your hospital executives, your surgeons, your nurses, and you have to listen and communicate to see what it is that they need from us at any given time. At some point, they might say, we need to make our operating room more efficient. Okay, well, we're experts at that, and we can bring resources from any part of our company to help you do that. And so attracting talent and retaining talent to meet service needs, that's what we're really strong at. And Rafael, you know, pointed out that if anything, in this battle to try and drive a higher percentage of the limited providers that are out there to our company, we're winning that battle. We're actually attracting more as a percentage of the available graduates today than we ever were before. And our vacancy rates have come down during some of the most difficult recruiting times I could ever imagine, and that is the COVID pandemic. So I think we're doing a good job showing that we're connecting to the workforce that's out there, and bringing those people to hospitals certainly is important to maintaining service needs, because I guarantee you in this zero-sum game, some institutions that don't have the right culture, the right partnership with their anesthesia provider may find it harder to attract, you know, people. And we work very hard to be able to attract those people. Leveraging technology so that everybody is transparent. And I will say that we're really key on using data, because if you want to work with your partners and solve problems, you have to get objective information. And so we've been voracious at collecting data, quality data, economic data, operational data, customer satisfaction data. We collect patient surveys on every patient case that we encounter. We collect surgeon surveys. We collect C-suite surveys. And we bring that to the table, and we're honest. And we say, look, this is where we're doing well as a partnership, and this is where we think we need to focus. But at least it's not anecdotal. It's based upon objective data. And we find that our partners really like to see that, because they have important decisions to make, and they value the fact that we can bring added information to the table to make everybody smarter. So, you know, service is key. I mean, the number two drivers of, you know, whether an anesthesia entity gets to practice in a given community turns out to be, you know, first, service, and two is cost of providing that service. And we know that. And so we focus very much on both of those equations.
Dr. DiCapua, Dr. Cartagena, I've had the great pleasure of watching NAPA North American Partners in Anesthesia over the last decade or so just get better and better and gain a bigger and bigger footprint and really focus on serving its customers, its clients, and so forth. And you've got two big constituents, your hospitals and surgery centers on one hand, your anesthesia providers on the other side. And you understand well, you execute on it well. And I think the proof is the growth you've had over the last decade. It's been amazing to watch. I want to thank the both of you for joining us today in the Becker's Healthcare Podcast to talk about sort of looming shortages in anesthesia and more importantly, what can you do about them as an organization? And I think your point, John, on it's somewhat being a zero-sum game. If you can't staff, you can't provide surgery. If you can't staff,
right,
you can't provide services, no matter how big your operating room is, no matter what you have in terms of equipment and operating rooms. You have to be able to staff and staff great. So your point is well taken. Dr. DiCapua, Dr. Cartagena, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And, we appreciate you keeping an eye on our journey. And we equally, will say that Becker's is just a fantastic source of information. We get a lot of stuff to come across our desk to read. Becker's is something that we read. And so I want to thank you very much for always reporting on this industry.
Certainly is. Thank you, Scott. We appreciate your time.
John and Raphael, thank you both very much, gentlemen. Thank you.